Depression and anxiety have been called by some an epidemic in America. About 10% of Americans suffer from clinical depression. 54 million of us are prescribed antidepressants at any given moment.
And even at that rate, many epidemiologists believe that clinical depression is diagnosed and treated less often than it actually occurs.
Our next guest, Dr. Gordon Livingston, says that the United States has become a devout, militarized, defensive, xenophobic, and selfish society. Behind it all, he says, is fear. Dr. Livingston's new book discussing fear and courage in America is called The Thing You Think You Cannot Do, 30 Truths About Fear and Courage. He joins us now. Dr. Livingston, thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here, Rob.
Well, you start the book saying fear is the most important issue facing us today. Why is that?
Well, I think that much of our lives is governed by fear. It was an adaptive emotion when our ancestors lived on the plains of Africa, but now it's come to dominate our lives in ways that are very unfortunate. And I think that the only real antidote to fear is courage, and it seems to me that we need more of that if we're going to survive.
Why do you think anxiety, depression, fear are so common in the United States now?
Well, it's a pretty complex society we're living in, and I think that there's a great deal of, I think that depression has some biological roots, and so does anxiety, but I think that there's also an element of living a very kind of cautious, safety-conscious life that afflicts a lot of people and makes them afraid to take the risks that we all need to take if we're going to live fulfilling lives. Anything we do carries with it some risk. The biggest risk probably is falling in love, and yet, if we don't take those sorts of risks, then we're going to live very boring and fearful lives.
That's a running theme that I gathered from your book, that we have this quest for an impossible state of perfect safety, but we're losing more in the process of chasing that than the actual risk in the first place, oftentimes.
Yeah, because it's impossible to live a completely safe life. And I think chasing that illusion causes us to panic for when something untoward happens, 9/11 being an example of that. This terrible attack occurred, and I think that as a nation we responded like a panic disorder patient. We immediately lashed out at countries that had nothing to do with the attack, and with consequently more loss of life and treasure. And I think that that's an example of how fearful people don't make good decisions.
Let's turn to courage. I'm sure we'll come back to fear some more as we talk. But describe for you, what is courage?
Well, fear is an emotion, and whereas courage is an action and can only be taught by example. And the title of the book comes from a famous quote from Eleanor Roosevelt about what consists of courage, that is, staring fear in the face and functioning without functioning in spite of the fear that we may be feeling. So I think that what we need to evoke courage are more examples of people who exhibit it.
Well, one of the most obvious fears, I guess, and you talk about it up front in your book, is the fear of death.
Yeah, that's the fundamental fear, I think, from which most of the others are derived. And, of course, the irony is that if we live very careful lives and are conscious of our safety at all times and buckle our seat belts and look both ways before crossing the street, exercise, eat well, we're going to die anyway. So that's the irony, that somehow we have trouble facing the fact that that's an inevitable part of life and has to be confronted.
Well, you served in the military. You graduated from West Point, served in Vietnam, and that's one of the most, running up courage versus fear, that's one of the most obvious ones, right? How does someone work up the courage to expose themselves to being shot at, blown up in wartime? Talk about that a little.
There's all kinds of courage. There's the physical courage of which to which you're referring now. There are people who are brave for a moment, there's the moral courage. That is the determination to stand up for things that we believe in. There's a kind of courage that's exhibited by people who are very resilient and who are able to incorporate terrible tragedies into their lives without breaking. I think we get confused. We're so in need of heroes that I think we get confused and label people heroic who are not really. And I think heroism has a specific definition. I think it requires choice. I think it requires a risk, and I think that risk has to be on behalf of another person. So somebody who lands an airplane on the Hudson River with a plane full of people is a good pilot, but he was in the front of the plane, so he didn't have a choice. A surgeon who performs an operation is exhibiting skill, but again, not taking any risk himself. And conversely, somebody who jumps off a tall building with a parachute is doing so in a way that doesn't benefit anyone else. So I think I think all that needs to be considered when we label people heroes.
Well, you said earlier, courage is best taught by example. Who are some examples of heroes, of exemplars of courage that you'd point us toward?
Well, I think people who have exhibited great moral courage, taking unpopular stands that resulted in their political demise, for example, or taking great risks like Daniel Ellsberg during the Vietnam War to release the Pentagon Papers. I think those are examples of moral courage. People who exhibit physical courage, those who jump in front of speeding trains to push someone else out of the way. I mean, that sort of thing is definitely courageous. But I think that we're so we get courage confused with generosity. Courage is a form of generosity, but someone who works hard on behalf of the poor may be extremely generous, but they're not necessarily taking the risks that courage requires. So I think I think we need to be a little bit better. And everyone who puts on a uniform is not automatically heroic either, although we behave as if that were true. And so I think all those things need to be defined so that we can recognize courage when it's really exhibited.
Are we built in with X amount of courage when we start off and we're either courageous or not? Or can we develop it? Can we train ourselves to be more courageous?
Well, yes, but we never really know until we're faced with the crisis. And I think that's why it's surprising, for example, in combat, the people who respond well under those kinds of hazardous circumstances are not always those that you'd expect ahead of time. They're not the biggest necessarily. They're not the strongest, but they're the ones who are able to overcome their fears in order to function well. And I think courage can be learned, but as I say, it can only be learned by example, by examining the lives and actions of people who have exhibited it, and so that we're able to at least theoretically imagine that we could respond well in a crisis. Whenever you know something happens, and they're now everything's being taped these days. You know, so when the cruise ship hits the rocks in Italy, and the tapes start running, what you hear is a lot of screaming. And I often wonder, well, what is the screaming about? Is that the is someone gaining something from that, or is that just a reflex reaction by people who are in one way or another giving up? And so I think that those are things that we ought to think about ahead of time. Are we going to be a screamer, or are we going to be somebody who takes some sort of constructive action if we're faced with a crisis?
We're talking to Dr. Gordon Livingston about his new book, The Thing You Think You Cannot Do, 30 Truths About Fear and Courage. Interested in hearing your thoughts on what we're talking about. Who is an example of a courageous person in your life, in history, in the world today. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Were you tested in a situation like the ones our guest is talking about? Did you react in what you thought was a courageous way, or did you have regrets afterward? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster. This is Central Time.
We continue our conversation now with Dr. Gordon Livingston. He's a West Point graduate, psychiatrist, author of The Thing You Think You Cannot Do. We're talking about courage and fear, mainly. We'll get your calls in just a moment at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we do, Dr. Livingston, you gave an example that got me thinking of anti-bullying programs that focus not on the bully, not on the victim, but on everybody else to have the courage to step up and stop the problem and express their disapproval. Is courage a social virtue in that way?
It certainly is, and I think that what you're talking about, of course, is the bystander phenomenon that is exhibited where one person is bullying or another, and the people who are there watching don't do anything. And so that's an example of it's an interesting phenomenon because it turns out that the more people who are watching, the less likely anyone is to intervene, assuming that somebody else is going to do it but it's an important example. Somebody who steps in, for example, when those motorcyclists attacked the people in the SUV in New York a week or so ago, there were people in the crowd who intervened to protect the woman who was in the SUV and to put a stop to the beating. So, and of course, there are others who didn't do anything. And so it's situations like that demonstrate whether people have courage or not.
Well, let's go to our callers now. Lisa is with us in Stoughton. Lisa, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I am just curious to know, Dr. Livingston mentioned that courage is something that you can learn from others. And I thought, well, that's easy enough for younger children to have all these wonderful role models. But how about older adults? It's not always easy to learn new tricks. So I'm just curious to know, how do older adults learn this?
All right. Thanks, Lisa. What do you think, Dr. Livingston?
Well, again, by observing people who are behaving with courage. Washington, for example, at the moment is presenting us with not a very good example of how to react to a crisis courageously. People seemed unable to agree on even keeping the government running, or to keep or to pay our debts, and this is an example, I think, of a sort of a collective lack of courage and allowing ourselves to be bullied by a small minority of people who really don't like the government. So I think that as adults, I think we never stop learning, and it's always possible for us to react courageously. We just there are examples all around us of people not doing so, and so I think we have to collect examples of people who know what courage is and are willing to act on it.
Lisa, thanks for the call. We'll go now to John in Hayward. John, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question because I've seen it in my generation as we age that so often people who were very courageous in their youth, as they age, become much more fearful. And I wondered if that is natural, you know, as we fear and start approaching death, as we start approaching death, we become more fearful.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think I think probably that is common because as we age, we feel less physically robust and less capable of responding quickly. Everyone sort of expects us to take it easy, and I think there is something about about the proximity of death that that causes us to be more cautious and want to prolong our existences as long as we can. So I think, yes, I think that's a genuine phenomenon.
You also write that apart from the fear of death as we age, we actually fear aging too.
Yeah, because that, you know, that's a derivative fear, and we have lots of people talk about the fear of infirmity, the fear of dependency. Someone described getting older as walking up a steep hill while somebody adds rocks to your pack, and the rocks that are being added are all the losses that we inevitably accrue as we get older. So it's not easy.
All right, we'll go back to the phones now with Pat in Milwaukee. Just dropped as I was saying that. How about that? Let's go to Ron in Beaver Dam then. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
What do you do? Thanks for taking my call. I was in the military as well, and I just like to comment that a lot of times I saw what would be looked at as courage is actually just training taking over a man's function. Courage, as far as I was able to tell oftentimes, is really a matter of character. And while that can be learned, it's also a self-determining process. Thank you.
That's an interesting distinction, Ron. Thanks a lot.
It is an element of character, and often when in some of our recent conflicts, going back to Vietnam, actually, there's all this talk about the importance of training the local people to take over the fighting from our troops. And I concluded that in Vietnam that you can't train a man to die for an idea. And so I think that's what distinguishes bravery and unit cohesiveness in the military is the willingness to sacrifice on the part of the people around you. And so there's some things you can train people to do, mechanical things for the most part. But it's pretty hard to train people to have good character.
All right. We've got Wendy and Madison on the line now. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I just wanted to call in with a courageous moment that I had to experience that I hope that no one else does or not many people do. I had premature twin boys that came home from the hospital after being in the NICU for 82 days and had been home for approximately 24 hours when I had to give CPR to one of them and had to send them back to the hospital. And the alarm was blaring and things were happening and trying not to freeze in a situation like that.
And it all came out okay?
How did it turn out?
Everything's fine, she said. So what do you think about that, Dr. Livingston?
Well, that's an example of how we're suddenly tested in and have our courage tested in unexpected ways, and one way to react to crisis obviously is to freeze and not be able to function. But it sounds like she avoided that with a good outcome. That's wonderful.
Time for one more call. We have Paul with us in West Bend. Paul, hi.
Good morning, good afternoon. I think one of the most profound examples of moral courage was a young Lutheran minister by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Mm. During the Nazi regime, he was beheaded for his courage, and it had a profound effect on it was upsetting the Nazi regime in the annihilation and the extermination of many different racial groups within the Nazi terror regime.
Thank you. A great example of courage, I would say. Yeah, somebody who
Bonhoeffer was a hero of the 20th century.
All right. Thanks so much for bringing up that example, Paul. And by the way, if we're almost out of time, if you've got an example out there of somebody who you think exemplifies courage, go over to the Central Time Facebook page, Central Time on WPR. Dr. Livingston, can you leave us with a pep talk, I guess, in 30, 40 seconds or so to explore our courage and build it up?
Well, we're only here for a brief period of time. Someone described life as the flicker of consciousness between two great silences, but still, it's incumbent on us, I think, to interact with each other and with the world around us with as much grace and courage as we can muster. So, good luck to everyone in that effort.
Dr. Livingston, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Nice to be here, Rob. Thank you.
That's Dr. Gordon Livingston. He's a psychiatrist. The book we've been talking about is The Thing You Think You Cannot Do, 30 Truths About Fear and Courage. And again, give us examples of courage over on the Central Time Facebook page.